A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.
An animation, a white arrow, then a word appears, campfire. Then blackness. In the distance, the rising sun peeks over a black horizon, causing the underside of the low sprawling cloud cover to glow pink. Then blackness. A chalky white image of a rattlesnake emerges from the darkness. Words appear in red. Netflix presents. An aerial view shows a straight two-lane highway flanked by arid scrubland.
Blue sky.
A Subaru Outback travels the highway. Another chalky image of a serpent with a mane. Words appear in red. A campfire production. The red vehicle stands out against the brown landscape.
Sky.
Clouds.
Blackness. Then a chalk drawing shows a serpent wrapped around a trident within a pentagram. A title appears in red. Rattlesnake. The view through the Subaru's windscreen is arid flatland. The car's driver sips her coffee.
Dog!
Dog? Where's the dog?
Over there. Didn't you see it?
No. What kind of dog was it?
Small dog.
Interesting. Or elephant!
Elephant? Where?
Yeah, what? Did you miss it?
The woman smiles at the girl in the back. They pass a green sign that reads, "Welcome to Texas. Drive friendly. The Texas way." The rising sun glints off a sign that reads, "Roadrunner Truck Stop Cafe. Open 7 days a week." Seated in the front windows of the adobe-style cafe are the driver and her six-year-old daughter. The driver is a woman in her early 40s with kinky hair tied back in a ponytail and light brown skin. A waitress refreshes the woman's coffee as they eat their breakfast. Later, at a gas station, the little girl sits in the Subaru's open back, scratching out a hole in the knee of her pants.
Hey, sweetie, don't pick your scab. Come on.
I was just checking.
Did you make that hole?
It was already like that.
It'll leave a scar.
I don't even have a scab, but Lily Stevens didn't push me.
Lily Stevens wouldn't push you if you hadn't thrown chalk at her.
She was making faces at me.
We don't hurt people. Not ever.
She deserved to be hurt.
The woman's mouth drops open.
No, she didn't. Clara, no one deserves to be hurt. No one. Okay? Come on.
In the washroom, the woman reads a text from Mark saying, "Kat, please talk to me." Her daughter steps out of a stall. The woman turns on the water for her daughter, then sends a text to her mom that reads, "Making good time. Call you in Oklahoma, X." Back on the road, the little girl sleeps in the back of the Subaru. Her mother checks in her rearview mirror. She stifles a yawn, then selects a Tony Robbins podcast on her smartphone.
We grow or we die. So we're unaware that we use events as a trigger to get home, back to the patterns we know, even if it's uncomfortable. So if you identify where you live, emotionally, the patterns are limiting you. The second piece is find the antidote.
Traffic slows. The woman's phone indicates an accident ahead.
Extreme stress. The difference in people's lives is not what we face, it's what we do with what we face.
She takes an exit.
It gives us these events, these, quote, horrific events, because there's an area of our life that has to grow. You can take yourself from a place where, in the face of absolute total tragedy, you triumph.
She drives alongside arid grassland that extends to low rolling hills in the distance. Struggling to stay awake, the woman blinks, then stretches her neck. In the back, her curly-haired daughter sleeps peacefully. Theirs is the only vehicle on the two-lane highway that cuts across the plain. Through her windscreen, The road stretches out before her in a straight line. A warning appears on her phone. It reads, no reception. The vehicle jostles, then stops.
Mommy, why do we stop?
The woman walks around the front to the passenger side, checking the tires.
Oh, great.
She crouches at the rear right wheel. It's loose on its rim.
Ow.
Her daughter lowers her window and peeks out.
Mommy?
The woman stands and glances at the arid brush that stretches for miles around them.
Somewhere, sweetie.
As the little girl does up her window, it reflects her mother. She doesn't notice that 100 yards behind her, 3 black shadows rise out of the ground and disappear into the sky. An aerial view shows their Subaru amidst the expanse of brown scrub. Walking amongst the dry grass, the little girl picks up a rock.
Poppy taught me how to change a tire. One day I'll teach you.
Her mother struggles to remove a lug nut.
In the meantime, you should probably come over here and get a head start and pay attention.
Nah, that's boring.
Yeah, suit yourself. Maybe you can help by getting Mommy her coffee.
The woman pulls on the wrench.
Mommy?
Oh, God.
The nut doesn't budge.
Is it okay when we get to Oklahoma, can we?
A rattlesnake strikes her daughter and the woman looks up from the tire.
Clara? Clara!
She sprints to Clara.
Show me!
She finds 2 marks on her leg.
Okay, it's okay, sweetie.
The snake slithers away.
It's okay.
She grabs her phone from her jean skirt pocket. It reads no service. She frantically scans the horizon.
Come on. Oh, it's okay. Clara? Come on, baby. Oh, sweetie.
She picks up her daughter's limp body and hurries back to her Subaru. Hearing music, she turns to see a trailer parked 100 yards away from the road. She squints at the long, narrow mobile home in confusion.
Hold on, sweetie.
She runs with Clara in her arms.
Hello?
She opens the screen door.
Can we help?
Then steps inside.
Hello?
The decor is 1950s. Sauce boils on the stove.
Stay with me, baby. Okay. Just stay with me, baby. Stay with me. Come on.
A woman appears in the narrow corridor.
Oh, I'm so sorry for barging in. My little girl, she got bitten by a snake. I really need your help. I got a flat tire and I can't get a signal. She's really burning. All I know what to do.
You're in luck, darling. I've worked on many a bite out here. Let me help her.
Oh, she's going blue. She's going blue. Please help her.
The woman hands Clara to the pale, dark-haired stranger.
What can you do?
The nearest town's Tulia. You'll find a hospital there. You best get that tire sorted out.
The stranger turns toward her bedroom.
Come on, don't just stand there, honey. Time's a-wasting. We'll discuss payment later.
Clara's mom pauses in the doorway. She watches the stranger disappear with Clara into a back bedroom. Then she rushes back to her car. She throws her body weight into the lug wrench while keeping an eye on the trailer. She loosens a nut. Moments later, she puts on the spare tire, then removes the jack. Dust flies as she drives up to the trailer. She enters and scans the tight quarters. She rushes along the narrow hallway to the back bedroom.
He's here. Clara.
She brushes Clara's hair back and inspects her face, which is still and calm.
Mommy.
When Claire opens her eyes, her mom smiles, then presses her forehead to her little girl's. She taps her daughter's chest, then scans her body. She pulls up her left legging and finds no snake bite marks. She glances up in confusion, then checks Claire's right leg. It, too, is free of bite marks. Claire's mom glances toward the hallway, then checks Claire's legs again. She grabs her limp body and lifts her off of the single bed. She carries her from the dimly lit wood-paneled room. In the main room, the floral curtains are drawn, but the morning sunlight glows through the thin material. She glances out the glass screen door, then at the record playing on an old turntable. She carries Claire from the trailer, and moments later, she drives away, leaving the trailer standing alone in the vast scrubland. Back on the road, she passes a dusty sign with the drawing of a windmill on it. It reads, "Welcome to Tulia, the richest land and the finest people." In the town of Tulia, shops line the main street. There's a butcher's and a gun's ammo shop. Off the main road, a man walks his dog along an overgrown sidewalk, and children ride bikes near a railway crossing in the Tulia Memorial Hospital.
We'll keep her in for the day, monitor her condition. Trust me, if a five-year-old was bitten by a rattlesnake, you'd know it. From the looks, it's just exhaustion, mild dehydration.
You should have seen her. She was burning up. She wasn't breathing. She turned blue, for Christ's sakes.
Clara's mother is with the doctor outside Clara's room. Later, the doctor examines her.
Were you feeling out of sorts at all during the drive?
No.
What about medication? You taking anything?
Nothing, no.
Listen, Phoenix to Oklahoma can be a long haul.
Yeah, well, I'm not a very good flyer, so driving was the lesser of two evils.
Were you feeling,
Is this necessary?
Apprehensive or stressed before the drive?
No. Yes, I guess. It's been pretty crazy.
He takes her blood pressure.
We're starting over, and the move's been a lot on Clara.
You're a single mother?
Yes.
Slightly elevated. Not surprising, but nothing alarming.
Clara's mother sighs and lowers her gaze thoughtfully.
Look, I know this sounds crazy, but there has to be some kind of explanation. I mean, that old woman, maybe she had, I don't know, like an ancient remedy on her shelf or something. I'm just telling you what happened.
Your daughter's gonna be fine. She just needs to rest. You need to do the same. Get some sleep.
Distracted, she nods faintly. Clear fluid drips into an IV. Clara's mom naps in a chair with her head resting on Clara's bed. Her eyes blink open and she lifts her head onto her hands. She gazes at her daughter, tucked beneath a blanket, sleeping peacefully on her side. Then her worried gaze drifts around the room. She pushes herself away from the bed and sits up. Later, she pours herself a coffee from a coffee urn in the corridor.
That's all it is. God's will.
She overhears. In a nearby room, a man and a woman stand over an elderly man in a bed. The weeping woman meets Clara's mom's gaze, and Clara's mom offers a sympathetic smile. The woman wipes her nose, then turns her attention to the old man. Elsewhere, a wall clock ticks, 1 minute to 11. The corridor adjacent to the nurse's station is vacant. At the end of the hallway, a human silhouette appears in a translucent window. In Clara's room, Clara's mother peers outside through the blinds.
Such a pretty little thing.
A man stands beside Clara.
I think we almost lost her. You really are lucky. Things could have ended much differently.
You are?
I'm here to talk about your payment, Miss Ridgway.
Oh.
Why don't you pull up a chair?
So we have insurance, my daughter and I both. We're both covered.
Oh, I'm not talking about your hospital debt.
They sit.
I'm talking about the other debt. One you now owe.
Miss Ridgway stares at the man in the suit. He glances at Clara.
What was done for your daughter doesn't come cheap. Her little soul was spared. And now you owe one in return.
I'm sorry, I thought you said soul.
Miss Ridgway, you don't have long to pay your debt. You only have until sunset, which is...
He checks his watch.
Now only 7 hours away. The soul you take can be any one of your choosing. But it must be human. And it must be paid in full and on time.
Miss Ridgway gapes at the man in disbelief. She glances about the room and gets to her feet.
Okay, I don't really understand what's going on. I don't know who you are. I think I'm gonna call security. I would like you to leave the room and leave my daughter alone.
Failure to meet your debt, Miss Ridgway, will result in your daughter's condition returning to what it was.
I'd like you to leave now.
Let me remind you of what that looked like.
The man's expression hardens. Clara sweats.
Clara? Sweetie?
She will suffer.
What have you done to her?
Before she succumbs to the snake venom.
The snake bite reappears.
Working its way through her tiny body.
Please stop it.
She will die, Miss Ridgway. That I can't assure you.
They can't stop fighting! Get out of here! Get out! Help! Someone come in here now! Please, somebody help me!
7 hours, Miss Ridgway. You best get a move on.
Miss Ridgway stares fearfully at the man. Orderlies hurry down the corridor.
I need help! In here! Quick!
They rush past her into the room.
I need you to call. Did something happen in here?
Who you want us to call?
Miss? Miss?
Clara sleeps peacefully in her bed. Miss Ridgway scans the room.
Miss?
She draws back neighboring curtains to find two empty beds.
Should I call security?
No, that won't be necessary.
Are you okay?
Miss Ridgway covers her mouth and glances fearfully about the room. Later, she exits the hospital.
I've been up since before dawn, driving. Maybe I need to check into the motel across the road.
That's probably for the best. We'll keep an eye on her for you.
Just say goodbye to her.
In the room, the orderlies leave her with Clara. She leans over her daughter.
I don't know what's going on. I'm so sorry. This is insane. I just want you to be okay.
911, what's your emergency?
Outside the hospital, she's on her phone.
Hello? 911, what's your emergency?
Miss Ridgway lowers her phone. She gazes at the ground. Then her jaw tightens. Nearby, train crossing lights flash. A train pulls into a train yard. Miss Ridgway drives her Subaru over a bridge above the lights. She passes a sparsely populated trailer park, then drives beneath a bridge. Leaving the town, she drives back out the arid plain. She scans the brown scrub that surrounds her. She leans forward in her seat, clutching the wheel. Her flat tire lies on the road's dry, grassy shoulder. She approaches and inspects its rim. Taking a deep breath, she lifts her gaze to the trailer's location. She stands, folds her arms, and walks into the brown grassland. The golden sun beats down on her as she approaches the site where the trailer was. It's no longer there. She searches the ground where it had been, but there's nothing but dust and low-lying scrub brush. On the two-lane highway, a tanker pulls up behind her Subaru.
Great.
She hangs her head, then waits as the driver climbs out from behind the wheel.
I'm fine! I don't need any help!
She waves him away, but the husky man charges toward her. He pulls out a crowbar out of his back pocket.
Gonna die, Katrina! Only one way to save her!
Stay away from me.
There's nowhere to run!
Stay away from me!
Katrina Ridgway falls backwards onto the dirt. The man stands over her. He has a bloody right eye and two gunshot wounds to his chest. Katrina grabs a rock. Nearby, a rattlesnake coils to strike. Katrina sees it and opens its mouth. She flings her rock at the snake, but it continues to stare at her, sticking its forked tongue in and out of its mouth. Katrina looks around. The man and his truck have vanished. She covers her mouth and tears stream down her cheeks. The snake slithers off amongst the scrubby bushes. Katrina doubles over, overcome with emotion. Elsewhere, a tattered American flag flaps in the breeze beneath a gleaming midday sun. Antlers attached to an animal skull lie discarded near an old grain elevator. An aerial view shows the flat roof buildings of Tulia, laid out symmetrically in a grid pattern, separated by wide roads. Katrina drives back into town. She pulls into a single-story motel. She parks in front of one of its rooms, then, gripping the steering wheel, she rests her head on her hands. Slowly, she lifts her gaze. She checks her side view mirror, then scans the parking lot out her window. She taps the steering wheel absentmindedly with her thumbs. She glances at her phone. On her home screen is a picture of she and Claire smiling. It's 12:06 on Wednesday, November 7th. With a sigh, she gazes down at her lap. The words "Murders, Tulia, Texas" are typed into a Google search. Katrina scrolls to a headline, "Truck driver shot dead near Tulia, Texas." She clicks on it and goes to the Tulia Times website. A picture of the tanker driver appears. She reads, "Whitmore, 48, loving father of three. Multiple gunshot wounds, random act of violence." She views a photo of the crime scene where detectives gather evidence behind police tape. Off to one side of the photo, standing in the glow of the setting sun, is the silhouette of a woman in the distance. Upon Katrina's closer inspection, the woman's shape resembles the stranger from the trailer. Katrina scrolls through more headlines. Australian hiker found dead in Texas Canyon. And in the Texas Times, lawyer stabbed to death, Texas diner. She clicks on the Texas Times article and a video shows a picture of the man who visited her in the hospital.
This is the diner in Tulia, Texas, where 47-year-old lawyer Donald Covington was fatally stabbed in the chest by 32-year-old school teacher Michael James Warner just before sunset. Witnesses say Warner kept repeating in a bizarre manner, "a soul for a soul," as he attacked Covington. Warner is currently in
Katrina pauses the video. She squints at the image as she rewinds it. A police car drives backwards alongside a firearm store. She pauses the image and notices in the window of the store is the silhouette of the woman from the trailer. Thank you. She focuses in on the figure, which is identical to the one in the previous photo. Her eyes dart about, then Katrina types, Tulia Sunset ? Into a Google search. She scrolls down for the answer. 5:37 p.m. She glances in her rearview mirror and studies the Tulia Hospital entrance across the road. She turns around in her seat and looks toward the hospital. Later, she opens the door to her motel room. She wheels in a suitcase and shuts the door behind her. She glances around the room, then tucks a ringlet of curly hair behind her ear. Later, she sits on the bed in a hooded yellow sweatshirt and jeans and ties up her sneaker. She rummages through a duffel bag and finds a baseball cap.
The difference is not what we face. It's what we choose to do when we face it. The difference is not what we face. It's what we choose to do when we face it.
With her baseball cap on, she massages her neck and then zips up her sweatshirt. She takes a deep breath and meets her gaze in a mirror. From the minibar, she takes a small bottle of vodka. She chugs a long pull from the bottle. She studies the mirror in front of her, reflected back as a painting of a wolf that hangs on the wall behind her. Turning, she looks at the image of the animal trotting through snow. Its yellow eyes gaze forward intently. Katrina meets the wolf's piercing glare. Later outside, Katrina shields herself behind her car as she studies the entrance to the Tulia Memorial Hospital. She notices the weeping woman chewing her nails. Inside, a heart rate monitor measures Clara's heartbeat as she sleeps. In the corridor, Katrina strolls toward the nurse's station with her hands in the pockets of her yellow hoodie. She lowers the brim of her baseball cap to hide her face as she strolls past the nurses at the desk. She quickly checks over her shoulder, then peeks into the old man's room. He lies asleep, with a younger man seated at his bedside watching television. She ducks into the coffee corner and tucks herself against the machine. She surreptitiously sneaks another glance at the old man. He's unconscious, his upper body propped up with pillows and bed. The younger man remains fixated on the television. Katrina notices a poster on the wall that reads, "Take life one cup at a time." She heads back toward the nurse's station. In an adjacent room, a visitor sleeps in an easy chair beside a patient who watches TV. Katrina keeps her head down, then peers into the next room, where a doctor attends to a young man's broken leg. At the end of the corridor, Katrina's doctor goes over a file with a nurse. They glance up at Katrina, so she slinks down another corridor. In the cafeteria, Katrina pauses near the food counter. She glances across the cafeteria. At a table, a doctor squeezes the weeping woman's hand, then leaves her. Katrina removes her baseball cap and smooths the loose strands of curly hair around her face. Then she approaches the woman.
I'm so sorry about before. That was so nosy of me. I shouldn't have just been peering into your room like that.
It's fine.
I just wanted to offer my condolences.
He's not gone yet.
Oh, no, of course.
Katrina shakes her head, then the woman indicates the seat across the table.
You want to sit?
Oh, sure.
Katrina sits and smiles warmly at the woman. She's also in her early 40s with shoulder-length brown hair. She wears a cross around her neck. Gazing at the table, she struggles to meet Katrina's gaze.
Such a strange thing. Waiting for your daddy to die.
Katrina glances down at the table between them. The woman wipes her nose.
Anyway, I'm sorry. What brings you here?
My daughter, she got sunstroke. We've been driving all day, and she's not feeling too well.
How's she doing?
She's fine. Doctor, I think she just needs some rest.
The woman offers her hand.
I'm Lorraine.
Susan.
Lorraine holds Katrina's hand between hers.
Anyway, it was nice chatting with you. I hope you and your little one get out of here soon.
Well, she's out for the count right now. And I am going stir crazy in that silence all by myself. So I was wondering if maybe I could keep you company.
With Daddy?
Mm-hmm.
Later in Lorraine's father's room.
Apparently they can hear you. The nurse described it kind of like a two-way mirror. Was it a one-way mirror?
Lorraine holds her father's hand.
Either way, he won't be waking up.
Katrina sits on the opposite side of the bed.
But I'm still here, Daddy.
She glances over her shoulder at the old man's heart monitor.
You okay, Susan?
It reads 68 beats per minute. Katrina meets Lorraine's concerned expression.
He seems to be at peace.
Lorraine studies her father's face as she strokes his hand. She reaches for her purse and finds her phone.
Hey, y'all here? B7. No, it's at the, all right, well, just wait there, I'm coming. Leave it to my sister to get lost in a hospital this small. I gotta go grab him.
I should go get Clara.
Thank you, Susan.
As Lorraine strides down the corridor, Katrina watches her from the doorway of her father's room. She slips back inside and shuts the door behind her. She eyes the hallway from the door's narrow window. Then she steps toward Lorraine's father. She draws the curtain to block the door. She moves closer to his bed, then slides her hand between the two pillows beneath his head. Without disturbing him, she carefully slips the bottom pillow out from underneath him. She sets it down on the bed. He sleeps peacefully, a breathing tube up his nose. Katrina closes her eyes.
I have to do this.
Katrina gapes toward the sounds approaching the door. Moments later, she shuts herself into the bathroom with the pillow. She leans against the wall and presses her face into it. She listens at the door. Next, she slowly opens the door into the room. Lorraine and four family members look up from the bed.
Just using the bathroom.
Frank?
Katrina watches as the man remains still in his bed. Family members reach down and place their hands on Frank's body. Then they all stand back from the corpse. Katrina's chest heaves as she studies the dead man. Lorraine embraces the man beside her as her sister leans down and kisses Frank's cheek. Lorraine glances at Katrina, who averts her gaze. Katrina grabs her baseball cap and leaves the room. In the corridor, she pulls on her cap. As she strides along the hall, she squeezes her head between her hands. Then her hands slide down the sides of her face. She pauses outside Clara's room and peers at her through the window. Next, she scans the corridor. Clara sleeps peacefully tucked in her bed. Then Katrina goes. fades as the bright globe of the sun eclipses it. It shimmers in the blue sky, casting its rays down on the symmetrical streets of Tulia. Katrina's red-violet Subaru is parked in front of a shop. A child and car sign hangs in a rear window. Katrina sits behind the wheel with her eyes closed. She looks at a dashboard clock that reads 12:48. On the sidewalk in front of her, a young boy rides a bicycle. She glances at a couple who emerges from a shop carrying a standing lamp. Over her shoulder, she sees a man across the street wearing an apron. He leans against a brick wall smoking a cigarette. Further along the sidewalk in front of her, the boy has stopped his bike. He stares at her over his shoulder, then turns his bike towards her. He cruises along the sidewalk in front of her car, then hops off his bike. Katrina breathes heavily as she watches the boy drop his bike. He steps up to her passenger side window and stares at her. He taps the window with his finger and Katrina straightens. Then, the pale-faced boy taps his wrist. Katrina watches as he takes several deep breaths, then smashes his forehead into the window. Blood splatters the glass. Katrina panics and tries to open her door. Suddenly, glass shatters and she falls into the road. A truck swerves and narrowly misses her.
Jesus Christ, lady.
The truck driver approaches.
Are you all right?
She gets to her feet in a daze.
What the hell happened?
Stay away from me.
She checks inside her car.
What were you thinking? I almost ended you.
The passenger window is intact. She grabs her hat.
Is everything okay? Hey, you don't look all right. You want me to call someone?
She moves away from the man. As she walks away, she pulls on her baseball cap.
You fucking serious? Hey!
She leaves the man standing by her car.
Fucking basalts, man.
The man shakes his head and goes back to his truck. Katrina's phone reads 135. She sits before a shot at a bar, massaging her neck. She downs the drink. The female bartender refills it for her.
No one's on the house.
Katrina nods her thanks when another woman runs in and takes a stool beside her at them.
Well, hell, Abby. Are you gonna put this down to another roller derby injury? Huh? It's a heck of a sport you chose there.
Just give me a beer, Francine. Please.
Katrina glances at the younger woman's bruised face.
Definition of insanity. Doing the same thing and expecting a different result.
So they say.
Abby chugs her beer, then notices Katrina's watchful eyes.
I know you.
Katrina shakes her head and looks away. Abby tenses as a man strides in and slams some bills on the bar.
Come on. Enough's enough.
Let me stay, please, just a little while.
Get up off that stool, Abby.
Billy, just let her finish your damn beer.
This don't concern you, Francine. Unless, of course, you wanted to.
Francine meets the man's gaze, then drops her hands.
Can't have y'all getting into it here.
With her face hidden beneath the brim of her hat, Katrina studies the couple.
Abby.
All right. Let's go.
Hold up. Apologize to Francine for coming in here and making a scene. Upsetting this nice customer. Go on.
As Billy glares intently at her, Abby turns to the bar.
Sorry.
Just get out of here, both of y'all. Go on, get.
Abby scurries out and Billy shrugs.
place is going to shit anyways.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
He casts a lingering glance at Katrina, then saunters out.
Go! Get out! Ain't they a pair?
They live near here.
Oh, yeah. Julia's finest. Only a matter of time before she ends up in the obituaries. Some people just beyond help.
Katrina downs her second shot. She wipes her lips, then hops off her bar stool. At the door, she peers through the blinds. On the street, Abby evades Billy's grasp. Katrina steps outside.
I know it's gotta make a scene. Get in that fucking truck. Get in the truck. I'm not standing here in the goddamn street. Come on. Get in.
She crosses the road. As Billy wrestles Abby toward his truck, Katrina reads a bulletin board. On a missing poster is a picture of the young boy she saw on the bike. His name is Jared Townsend, and he's been missing since 2010. She looks back to see Billy's truck drive down the main street. Later, she drives. Billy's truck cruises a tree-lined street. On the overgrown sidewalk, plastic chairs are overturned. Katrina follows them in her Subaru. Reaching a dead end, the road curves to the left and Katrina pursues them around the bend. The truck pulls into the driveway of a rundown bungalow. Its front lawn is brown and scraggly. The garage door opens. Katrina passes as the truck pulls into the garage and clocks the house number.
12 Amorosa.
12 Amorosa. 12 Amorosa.
On her smartphone, she zooms into the location using a map app. She bites her lip, then sighs. On the back window of her car is a drawing of a woman and her daughter and a bumper sticker that reads, "Friends, not food," beside a picture of a cow. She opens the back door and searches her trunk. She finds bug spray and a paring knife. She unsheathes it. She stabs her suitcase with it. She turns and sees a priest in black robes standing in the doorway of a roofless, burned-out adobe church. Its mud brick fence is crumbling and the yard is overgrown with scrub. The priest holds his hand like a gun and points at her. Suddenly, his arm bursts into flame. Katrina gapes as he is engulfed in fire, along with the cross atop the building. Black smoke billows from the arched windows. Later, a gun is placed on a glass counter before Katrina.
Go on. It ain't gonna bite you.
She picks it up.
Lightweight, easily concealable, but most important, accurate. Shoots a maximum 16 rounds through a flush-fitted magazine. I'll do you two boxes for the price of one. You ever fire one of those, darling?
I'll take it.
All right. I just gonna need to see your license. You're a Texas resident, I take it.
No.
A clock ticks a quarter past two.
Well, I'm afraid I can't be letting you purchase a firearm. Residents of Texas only.
Look, my daughter and I, we were attacked on the road. I feel like I need protection, and I don't know what you can do. Maybe you could just turn a blind eye, or I don't, what?
The man looks down and shakes his head.
When did it get to be like this? When did the open roads of this great country of ours revert to such savagery? It's not right, not one bit. Where's your little one?
In the hospital.
Jesus, what?
He holds up his hands.
I'm sorry, I can't help you, but this man can.
He writes.
His name's Charlie. Lives here in Tulia. You can find him here. It's a cash-only transaction. Guess you call him a private dealer.
The antique clock's silver pendulum is engraved with a smiling sun. The real sun eclipses the pendulum. The road speeds beneath Katrina as her car speedometer hits 80 miles an hour. Outside a warehouse in the desert, Clara rings a bell. The flag of Texas is painted on the garage door. Behind her, an ancient metal windmill rattles in the wind.
What's he wrong?
Katrina retreats from the intercom.
Hi, Earl sent me. He said he'd vouch for me. Are you Charlie?
Lose the cap.
She turns to a surveillance camera on her left, then bites her lips. She takes off her ball cap. She looks into the camera. The garage door opens, and just inside stands a white man in his mid-60s with a gray beard. His brown hair is receding, and his sweatshirt is splattered with paint. Moments later, he studies her identification. In his shop, work lights illuminate paintings on easels and partially completed antique cars. On a large tapestry is a painting of a man wearing a pointed black hood and cloak.
Okay, Katrina Ridgway. I'm gonna have to do a quick body check.
Is that really necessary?
Katrina glances at the painting of the Klan uniform. Okay. Then she holds out her arms. Charlie puts her ID between his teeth and begins patting her lower legs. Nearby, a moth flits around a flickering light bulb. A clock clicks 2:49. At a coffee table, Charlie counts cash as Katrina rubs her hands together nervously.
You want me to fix you up some tea?
No, thank you.
She sits on the couch opposite Charlie.
More of a coffee drinker, huh?
Guess.
My wife, Tracy, she'd stock the cupboard full of a whole variety of exotic flavors. Hibiscus was her favorite.
So can we...
You sure you don't want to try some? It's no trouble.
I'm sure. I've got to go.
Charlie holds a vape pen to his lips.
Tracy's no longer with us.
He takes a drag as Katrina drops her head into her hands. He sets down his vape, then scratches his beard as smoke swirls around him.
She took the barrel of a Glock identical to the one that you're buying. And put it in her mouth.
Okay. I'm so sorry. So sorry to hear about your wife, but I've got to get going.
Charlie chuckles sadly.
Listen to me just rabbiting on. Now she's all yours.
Katrina touches the gun case, but Charlie grabs her hand.
The piece, that is. The rounds are another 50.
Katrina reaches into her back pocket.
I think I've got 40.
She counts out bills.
I mean, I could rustle up the other 10, but I've got to go.
I ain't gonna deprive a woman of carrying a piece. Now, what kind of a man would I be? I'll let the 10 slide.
Thank you.
She sets down the money, then takes the boxes.
You ever handle one of them before?
Charlie reaches into his couch.
Because if you need some pointers...
He sets a pistol on the table.
I offer that for free.
Katrina closes her gun case.
No, I'm,
Who's the unlucky son of a bitch?
What?
They got it coming? You out to end someone. I can see it in your eyes plain as day. So, I want to know, Katrina Ridgway, that you're sure that they got it coming.
Katrina stares at the man, her chest heaving. Later, she speeds down paved road flanked by scrubland.
Hi, it's me again, Mr. Glock. I thought today one of the Glocks I've not demonstrated or talked about is the good old reliable Glock 19. It's a magazine full of
a YouTube video.
Notice. And we'll see if it has one in the chamber. Let's check that.
On her phone, Katrina watches a man fire at targets. Later on the plains, she positions herself 20 yards from a water bottle and aims her gun. She misses, then takes a few steps forward. She points her weapon at the bottle perched on the fence of an old corral. She misses again. She strides within 5 yards of it. and takes aim once more. She connects and the water bottle explodes. With a hand on her hip, she stares at the ground. In her car, a text from Mom comes in on her cell phone. It reads, "Must be close now? X. It's 4:33. Katrina drives, her expression determined. She cruises through Billy and Abby's neighborhood, then pulls her car off the road into a dirt field. She parks beside a wooden fence, its base littered with old barrels and tires. She grabs her weapon. Moments later, she sneaks through trees that border a concrete fence. She clambers over the fence with her gun tucked into the back of her jeans. She peers around the corner of the house and covers her nose and mouth with a bandana. She sneaks through a back door into a cramped laundry room. Towels are folded atop machines, and the surrounding shelves are cluttered with belongings. Crouching low, Katrina creeps through the laundry room to the adjacent hallway. With her pistol in hand, she peeks out the open door. She looks to her left, then she moves to her right down the hallway toward the voices. She passes framed photographs hanging on the walls. She nears an open doorway. She peers into a bathroom, curtains hang in the window, and she can see the sink and countertop. She adjusts her bandana. She watches a hand reach for a towel hanging on the wall.
Shit. The towels are all wet.
I'll get
them.
For sure?
Can't have my girl drying off no wet towel.
Katrina darts past the doorway. She stands against a wall at the end of the corridor. Billy steps out of the bathroom and strides down the hallway away from Katrina, his naked body damp from the shower. He steps into the laundry room. Katrina readies herself and trains her gun on the empty corridor. Billy returns with towels. He strides toward Katrina, but she ducks out of sight. Katrina peers through the slats of a closet as Billy enters the bedroom. Abby follows with a towel wrapped around her body.
I gotta leave at 7.
Okay.
He pulls on his jeans.
We'll eat there?
Sure.
Katrina watches as Abby pulls a sports bra over her head and Billy zips up his pants. The couple sit on the bed, facing away from each other. Abby dries her hair with a towel.
Come here.
Katrina squints her dark eyes as she watches Abby freeze and slowly get to her feet. Wearing only her bra and underwear, Abby walks around the bed to face Billy. She stands before him.
You know.
Billy stands.
You haven't finished your punishment yet.
I'm not feeling so good. Maybe we could rain check.
You already made a fool of me once today.
Billy strokes the side of her face. Then he grabs her hair and she grimaces.
Please.
Without order, what are we?
Okay.
What will we be?
Animals.
Abby grips his arm.
You don't want to be an animal.
A tear trickles from Katrina's eye.
No.
Billy pulls Abby close, then he releases her.
Half hour should do it. Come on.
He leaves the room. Katrina watches Abby gaze after him fearfully. Katrina's dark eyes follow her as Abby picks up a pair of scissors and examines their sharpness.
I say, come on!
She sets the scissors back down, then strides out of the room in her bra and underwear. In the closet, Katrina shuts her weeping eyes. She wipes away the tears, then slowly slides the closet door open. She slips into the bedroom and pulls her bandana down away from her mouth. She covers her mouth with her hand, then replaces the bandana. She tucks it into the top of her sweatshirt. She passes a bureau on her way to the door. Something catches her eye. She carefully grabs a set of keys and shoves them in her back pocket. Ahead of her, doorways divide a long, narrow hallway. Wall sconces cast yellowy light to illuminate her way. She passes a hall mirror, then the hallway opens up. Coats hang on a coat rack to her right. She creeps toward the open doorway to the kitchen. With her gun trained in front of her, she sneaks into the kitchen's tight quarters. Above the gas burner, an interior window overlooks the sitting room where a woman's MMA match plays on a large screen TV. Billy lounges on the couch with a beer watching the match. His back to Katrina. Katrina backs away from the window and moves through the door. She shields herself behind a large cabinet, studying the back of Billy's head. Rounding the cabinet, she sees Abby standing on a table to his right, holding up several encyclopedias with each hand. Abby sees her and drops the books.
Fuck you doing? Get your stupid ass back up there. The fuck?
Billy turns and sees Katrina. She holds up his keys.
The fuck are you?
She tosses them on the couch.
Take the keys.
Billy leans forward.
Slowly.
Okay. Nice and slow.
Okay, put the beer down.
Okay, I'm putting it down.
Slowly. Okay?
Beer's down.
Okay. Get on the floor. You get down. Okay. You stay there, you don't move, okay? Thank you.
Abby lies down.
Get up. Get up, just get up. I want you to tell me how to get to the garage. Can we get to the garage from the house?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're gonna show me.
It's dark in the garage. The light from the house spills into the room as Billy opens the door.
Turn on the light.
He does, revealing brooms and tools hung neatly on one wall.
Let's go. Down.
Billy raises his hands and plods down the steps into the garage. Katrina keeps her gun trained on him. Stopping at his truck, he turns to face her.
We're going for a drive. I want you to follow my directions. I'm going to take you somewhere. Okay? You just listen to what I tell you. So get in the car. Just get in.
Billy unlocks the door, then opens it. In daylight, Katrina sits behind Billy as he backs the truck out of the garage. Abby rushes onto the front steps to see them drive away. Katrina ducks behind the seats. Abby stands frozen on the porch in her underwear. They drive through Billy's neighborhood, arid mountains in the distance. On her phone, Katrina Googles Tulia sunset and answers 5:37. Billy watches her in the rearview mirror.
Just look ahead.
He does. Lying on the floor in the back seat, Katrina looks up the location of the Palo Duro Canyon State Park on her phone. It indicates that they're 10 minutes away.
Hey, left at the T-junction.
Where are we going?
Just make a left.
Katrina keeps her bandana over her nose and mouth, and her gun trained on Billy. The sun glares. Its rays shine down on the arid hills that rise before them. Scrubby green bushes dot the brown slopes that pitch up toward the clear blue sky. A light dusting of snow covers some of the hillsides. Limestone formations rise out of the scrubland like monuments. Billy's truck wends its way through the canyon valley along a dirt road flanked by tall grasses that have gone to seed and deciduous shrubs whose leaves have turned a reddy brown. As they approach the limestone towers, Katrina glances over her shoulder at the surrounding brush.
Hello there.
Billy stops the truck in the road. Katrina rests her pistol on the back of his seat, her muzzle trained on Billy's neck.
Kill the engine.
Billy takes his time before turning the engine off. He keeps one hand on the steering wheel.
Toss the keys back here slowly.
Billy passes her the keys over his shoulder, fear in his eyes.
Please. Please. Just tell me what you want. I can get you money. I can get you anything you want. Please just tell me.
Katrina holds back her tears.
Get out the truck.
Billy shakes his head vehemently.
No. Because if I do, you'll shoot me.
I'm not asking you. I'm telling you, get out of the truck.
Why do you want to kill me? Just tell me what I've done so I know, please.
Snot pours from Billy's nose.
Please don't kill me.
Stop crying.
Please. I don't want to die.
Stop crying.
I can't help it because you're going to kill me. Please.
I need you to hold yourself together and get out of the fucking truck, okay? Do you hear me?
Please, because look, I know I've done some fucked up things in this lifetime. Okay, I know I have. But please, if you tell me, I can fix it, I promise. Please, please, because I don't want
to
die.
Okay, listen to me, you piece of shit. I just want your fucking truck.
Billy slams the seat back and pins Katrina. He grabs her wrist. The gun fires. Then she drops it on the floor. Billy grips Katrina's throat as she feels around for her weapon. Finding a metal cylinder, she grabs it and smashes Billy in the head. He escapes the truck as she reaches for a gun. Pinned by the front seat, the gun is just beyond her fingertips. She releases the seat and frees her body and grabs her weapon. She chases Billy towards the towering limestone structures that form the canyon. She hits the ground with a shot, then she shoots a rock formation as Billy ducks behind it. She sprints into the canyon and wends her way along the narrow path flanked by coarse limestone walls. An aerial view shows her jogging the canyon like a maze. The sun hangs lower in the sky, its orange glow peeking out from the top of a towering canyon wall. She continues running along the narrow path, now in shadow as the sun descends in the afternoon sky. She leans against the canyon walls to catch her breath. Glancing up, she sees the sun disappear behind the limestone's peak. She checks the time.
Where are you, you piece of...
The narrow path opens out to a majestic natural fortress of limestone that towers over the scrubland. The afternoon shadows lengthen up its walls as the sun sinks lower in the sky. Katrina trains her gun ahead of her. A young woman wearing a backpack takes photographs.
Well, you gave your best shot, Cap.
Katrina lowers her gun and moves closer to the woman in her early 20s.
Stay there. That's good. Hold that. Nice.
The young woman takes her picture as Katrina shakes her head in defeat.
Please. There has to be another way to put this right. She's just a child. Please, there has to be some other way.
Sorry, Kat.
You know what you gotta do.
Katrina shakes her head and scans the canyon walls that tower around her. Her eyes fill with tears as she gazes up at the low-hanging sun. Katrina takes deep breaths and studies the sky. She glances down at the gun she holds at her side. The young hiker lowers her camera and smiles. Katrina tightens her grip around her weapon.
Promise me she'll be all right. You promise me if I do this, it'll be over. You leave her alone.
Fair's fair.
The hiker turns her face, and her cheek darkens with a sudden bruise. Her neck twists, and the vertebrae bulge within her skin as it breaks. The sun sinks behind towering hoodoos. The time on Katrina's smartphone reads 5:39. Katrina sits on a rock ledge and lowers her phone as she weeps. Then, with sudden energy, she lifts her phone and films a selfie.
Clara, I want you to know that I love you so, so, so much. From the bottom of my heart. And none of this is going to make sense, because it doesn't make any sense. But I want you to know that I didn't want to leave you.
Katrina bites her lips and turns away from the camera.
And I had to do what I had to do to keep you safe.
She lowers her gaze and wipes her eyes, then lifts her face with a smile.
I want you to remember me and keep me close to your heart as best as you can. And don't let me fade.
Tears stream down her cheeks.
I love you so much. I love you so, so, so much, sweetie.
She leans in and kisses the phone. When she moves it away from her, she sees Billy standing on the cliff above her. He throws a rock at her head and everything goes black. A hazy image of Clara looks down from a blurry white background. Her face disappears into the white glow of the sun. Katrina's hand comes into focus, her fingers twitching on the rock. She lies face down with her eyes closed. Her brow furrows. She grabs her head and writhes in pain.
Yeah.
Billy holds the gun.
Come on, you crazy bitch. Give me them fucking keys.
Katrina stands and wipes her nose.
Yeah, what, huh? You want to fuck some plate?
She grabs the paring knife hidden in her sock.
Fuck you doing?
She holds it to her own throat.
What the fuck?
She pierces her skin when a rattlesnake at Billy's feet strikes. Billy tumbles backwards off a stone ledge and Katrina lowers her knife. She rushes past the snake and peers over the ledge at Billy's body lying on the uneven rock below. He lies splayed out on his back. Katrina gapes over the ledge at his bloody wrist and face. His throat moves as he struggles to breathe. She visually inspects his body and sees the two snake bite marks on Billy's left shin. She retreats from the ledge, and her eyes dart about thoughtfully. She gazes up at the creeping shadow as it nears the top of the canyon wall. The rattlesnake coils beneath a boulder, then retreats. Katrina holds the paring knife between her teeth, then climbs backwards down the canyon wall. Her feet knock shale and pebbles down the limestone. She searches for footholds with her sneakers, then losing her grip, she slides down a portion of the rock face. She glances down at Billy, who opens his eyes. Then she continues down the face as the shadows ascend the hoodoos that tower above her.
Please, no.
Still holding the knife between her teeth, Katrina steps down onto the ledge. She takes the knife in her hand and steps to the rock's edge.
Sister, why are you doing this? Please.
She crouches down and eases herself off the ledge to the flat stone where Billy lies. She leans over him as blood bubbles from his mouth.
Why are you doing this? Why?
It's all right. It'll all be over soon.
You crazy fucking bitch.
He coughs blood in her face.
You're gonna burn in hell for this. You're gonna fucking burn, you fucking bitch. You're gonna burn in hell for this. You'll burn.
Katrina gazes at the shadows overhead.
We'll see.
Then, gripping his hair with one hand, she draws the paring knife across his throat with the other. Turning her face away, blood splatters her cheek. She turns to look at him. Then, with a sigh, she sits back onto the rock. Glancing up, she sees the last ray of sun disappear behind the canyon wall. Darkness falls over her. Her eyes well with tears. Billy lies lifeless beside her. His eyes stare blankly and his face streaked with blood. Beyond the canyon, the sun's fading orange glow hovers over the dark horizon. In the darkness, Katrina wanders out of the canyon. She glances over her shoulder and sees the people in silhouette standing atop the limestone walls. A woman, a man, the trucker, the hiker. On the canyon wall ahead of her, the priest and the young boy look down. In the distance, the woman from the trailer. Katrina walks toward her. Her pace slows as the dark figures watch her pass. From the trailer and makes her way out of the canyon. Later, she lights a piece of cloth that leads to the gas tank of Billy's truck. It ignites, and she jogs away from the vehicle. She covers her ears as the truck explodes in a plume of white flame. She jogs onto the road. Next, she strides purposefully along the dark country road. Above her, wispy clouds drift past the full moon that illuminates her way. In her car, her phone lights up. It's a call from the Chulia Hospital. She holds her phone to her ear as she drives.
Hello.
Hello, Miss Ridgeway.
Speaking.
This is Dr. Hayes. I'm calling about your daughter, Clara. I've been trying you for around an hour now.
Tell me.
Sorry?
How is she?
She's fine. She's up, ready to go. She's wondering where you are. So am I, for that matter.
Katrina's eyes fill with tears.
Tell her I'm on my way. I'll be there soon.
Okay, will do. I'll make sure she gets something to eat.
Thank you.
She sets her phone down and drives through the darkness. A smile fills her face. At the motel, Katrina is freshly showered in the bathroom. She shuffles through her ablutions until she finds a Band-Aid. Gazing at a reflection, she bandages the cut on her neck. Later, she strides through the hospital to her daughter's room. Inside, Clara sits up, coloring in bed.
Mommy!
Sweetie?
Katrina rushes in.
They gave me Rachel an ice cream.
Ooh, they did, sweetie?
Yeah, and spaghetti for dinner. Oh. What happened to your neck?
Oh, I scratched it.
Did it hurt?
Yeah, a little.
When are we leaving? Do we have to stay in here?
Clara colors.
No, we don't. We're free to go now.
Katrina notices a drawing tucked beneath Claire's coloring book, and her smile fades. She withdraws the paper and examines a portrait of the woman from the trailer. Clara has drawn her standing in silhouette beneath a beaming sun. Katrina studies her daughter as she colors. Back in the canyon, the white limestone walls seem to glow in the darkness. Towering facade rises up to the rolling arid hills, where the morning glow of the sun spreads across the valley. The golden orb peaks over the horizon, casting its orange glow across the wide open sky. Katrina loads her Subaru.
Yep, no, you're right, Mom. I should have called you right back, but I just didn't want to bother you. But we're hitting the road now. Yeah. No, promise you, everything's all good.
She shuts her trunk. In the rearview mirror, the limestone canyon recedes into the distance.
What letter are we up to? Mommy?
What, sweetie?
What letter are we up to?
I can't remember. Now you decide.
Okay.
Clara's eyes widen as she peers through the front windshield.
Hitchhiker, Mommy. H for hitchhiker.
Up ahead, a man strolls along the shoulder of the road with his thumb out. Katrina eyes him as they pass. It's Billy. She glances at him over her shoulder but keeps driving. She studies him in her rearview mirror. He stops and stands at the side of the road, his eyes fixed on her vehicle.
Did you see him, Clara? Did you see him?
Yeah? Where do you think he's going, Mommy?
Katrina watches Billy recede into the distance in her rearview mirror. She shakes her head with a gulp.
Not sure, sweetie.
picture, Mommy. Rub to eye. Mommy? Come on, Mommy.
I...
Katrina shifts uneasily in her seat.
I...
Everything goes black. Credits, written and directed by Zach Hilditch. Produced by Ross M. Dinerstein, PGA. Executive producers, Carmen Ejogo, Ross Gerard, Zach Hilditch. Co-producers, Sam Tischler, Michael Uron, Colin Frederick, Joss Kesselman. Director of photography, Roberto Schaefer, ASC, AIC. Production designer, Jeff Wallace. Edited by Merlin Eden. Costume designer, Daniela Moore. Music by Ian Hultquist. Casting by John McCallery, CSA. Carmen Ejogo. Theo Rossi. With Emma Greenwell. And introducing Apollonia Pratt. Unit Production Manager, Sam Tischler. First Assistant Director, Doug Metzger. Second Assistant Director, Jessica Ritchie. Katrina Ridgway. Carmen Ejogo, Billy, Theo Rossi, Abby, Emma Greenwell, Claire Ridgway, Apollonia Pratt, Woman in Trailer, Debriana Mancini, The Suit, Bruce Davis, Truck Driver, Rio Alexander, The Boy, Spencer Mabry, Priest, Josh Kemble, Hiker, Alexandra Nell, Dr. Hayes, Sean Dillingham, Lorraine, Joy Jacobson. Moondogging, written and performed by Margaret Lewis and Mira Smith. Oh, it's nighttime, 'cause that's I Fall to Pieces, written by Hank Cochran and Harlan Howard, performed by Patsy Cline. Shortly after five, Woman in Love, written by Bennett Dean Lewis and Vanessa Oliveras. Mr. Hilditch would like to thank Allison James, Riker Hilditch, Jennifer Hilditch, Josh Kesselman, Tanya Cohen, Philip Damacourt, Andrew Hurwitz, Ross Hilditch K. Donahue, Sam and Nancy James, Will Manning, Francesca Hope, Melissa Chambers, Rachel Lynn Murray. Filmed on location in the state of New Mexico. This production participated in the New York State Governor's Office of Motion Picture and Television Development Post-Production Credit Program. New Mexico Film Office, www.nmfilm.com. American Humane monitored the animal action. No animals were harmed. E-Film, IATSE, SAG-AFTRA, Formosa Features. Country of first publication, United States of America. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States of America and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. The characters and incidents portrayed are fictitious, and any similarity to the name, character, or history of any person living or dead is entirely coincidental and unintentional. Copyright 2019, Netflix, U.S., all rights reserved.
The red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.